You could have been a supporter of any football team. You could have been, you could have been, you could have been. You could have been following the champions of the Champions League. You could have been, you could have been, you could have been. What's all this stuff you're giving us? There's just one team for me, and that's the town where I come from. In Bromley, in Bromley, in Bromley.
Hello everyone and welcome back to Ravens Weekly. For a brand new episode this week, my name is Matt Hall and I'm joined, as ever, by Josh Tindall. Josh, how are you?
Good, mate. You?
I'm very well, thank you. It's brilliant to be back and thank you to all of you who tuned into last week's episode. We've got plenty coming up for you, as we always do on Ravens Weekly, so we hope you enjoy this episode just as much. Now, let's start off by addressing the elephant in the room. But it's a very positive elephant, isn't it, Josh? Because we have been selected with the Blackpool fixture for live TV coverage on BBC Two, Saturday the 4th of November, 5:45 kickoff against Blackpool. Incredible news.
Yeah, really good. And, you know, we've been used to having TNT Sports come down this week, but not this week, this season, sorry. To have BBC Two, I mean, you know, I can't get much better than that, can it, Matt?
Absolutely not. And, of course, this will be our third televised game of the season. And I can't believe, Josh.
At home.
Third game at home, you're right. I can't believe we're saying that in late October.
I know, considering last year, we had zero.
We had zero. We were only one of only two clubs, I think, in the National League to not have one. And bearing in mind we finished seventh, I think the other club were relegated or were close to getting relegated. Which was very disappointing, but it's brilliant to see that those wrongs have been righted this year. And apart from that Barnet game, we gave a pretty good account of ourselves on TV against Maidenhead, and hopefully we can do the same against Blackpool, and I've got every faith that the team will be very up for it on that day. However, the TV is phenomenal and it's very exciting, but we want you to be here. We want you to come down to the Relocatum Community Stadium to back the team in one of our most, if not the most, high-profile fixture in recent years, particularly at home. So do come on down and get behind the team. It's sure to be a very special day, no matter what the result is. Limited tickets are available. They're selling fast. So get them on bromleyfc.co.uk or you can pop into the club shop to purchase them. But again, do check the website for opening times to make sure you turn up at the stadium when the club shop is open and ready to serve you for your ticket purchases and any other items that you wish to purchase as well. But brilliant news that we've been selected for TV on that one. We've had a little walk round, haven't we, Josh, with the TV crew, and the excitement really is starting to build now. It's starting to feel quite real.
Yeah, to be fair, I think when it was first announced, obviously we had two home games, didn't we, when we first knew about it, and then obviously we've got Woking on Saturday, London Senior Cup on Tuesday. So, you know, when you look at it like that, four games between the announcement and the game. But yeah, I think us going around with the nice people from the BBC and the FA, it was really exciting.
And they were genuinely very excited as well.
Yeah. And you even you know, got in there a little bit with BBC.
Oh yeah, well, I was asked, you know, what I do, and Jeff very kindly said that I do a bit of commentary here and there.
They said, give us a sample. You went, no. Okay, then, okay.
I did give a little sample, but I was put on the spot a little bit there.
Do you know what? Your cheeks went red.
Well, it's just because I felt very, on the spot, and I felt a little bit like, oh, everyone's got their attention. This little group have got their attention on me. So I had to do a little goal announcement or a mock goal announcement. But in all seriousness, it was brilliant to speak to them and even just to chat to them about Guy Mowbray and commentators and people like that and what they get up to.
Strictly Come Dancing.
Yeah, well, Strictly Come Dancing. If this game has significant injury time, we could be delaying the start of Strictly Come Dancing.
Unreal.
Which is incredible, isn't
That's
it?
Brilliant.
But in all seriousness, huge thank you to the FA and the BBC for all of the help that they've given us with this. It was brilliant to welcome all of the delegates yesterday and do the little walk around. And Josh, people see when they come to the stadium that actually the scaffolding for the camera towers is starting to take shape.
Yeah, I think if you come into the game on Tuesday, yeah, you'll be able to see the new scaffolding starting to take shape.
It's all very, very exciting, and I'm sure we'll have a bit more of an extensive preview for you next week.
But it's not exciting if you're sat at home watching it on the screen.
No, although that will be, you know, it will be incredible that Bromley are on BBC too, and not just Red Button or anything like that, which is great in itself, but to be selected. And this, which I didn't know, is the curtain raiser for the BBC's FA Cup coverage.
Yeah, this and year. Can we say that we've got the Match of the Day theme tune?
Oh, I said to I think it was Dave, one of the staff from the BBC, when they were walking around, that is a childhood dream realised. I used to watch Match of the Day every single week without fail, and always wondered, will I ever hear Bromley alongside that theme song on TV? And obviously watching it afterwards, because we'll all be here back in the team, will be incredible. But come on down. It's going to be an amazing atmosphere, everyone, and it's a game that is not to be missed.
And Matt won't be commentating for BBC.
Sadly not, but I'm primed and ready if I'm needed. You know, it's like a player who's not been selected, but, you know, is ready waiting in the wings just in case.
He's been warming up.
Yeah, warming up. Had to do
he's
a
been
vocal
doing
cord,
the open the gates, close the gates.
Open the gates, close the gates, but with vocal cords, obviously. We do our vocal warm-up before the podcast, don't we?
Which, the floor manager will be like Woody on the touchline going, Matt.
There we go.
Strip down, get ready.
You're just going to see me sprint across the pitch to the gantry.
Oh, brilliant.
In all seriousness, though, I'll have a proper professional covering the game. But hopefully I can learn something. But in all seriousness, we love doing the commentary here. And occasionally Josh jumps in if he wants to, if he feels like it.
Yeah, if I have to.
Yeah, if I force him to, basically. He doesn't really want to do it, to be honest. But he didn't want to do this podcast at first, and he's doing it now, and he's loving it. So, but anyway, we'll have a bit more of an extensive preview for that next week in regards to the FA Cup. Very, very exciting. Do get your tickets. Don't miss out. Hashtag the big one. Hashtag be there. Really looking forward to it. Josh, let's talk about National League action now. And we've had the, I keep saying hashtags, back-to-back home games in the past week. The first of which was Oxford City. And it was a real star performance from Olofela Olamola.
It was indeed. Two goals. His first two for Bromley. And yeah, I think he'll be happy with that one. Obviously, he wanted a goal at York, didn't he? But didn't quite fall for him. Obviously, would have wanted one against Willstone, his old club. But yeah, it came on Saturday and I thought he took it really well. Obviously, Bez with that really nice assist for the first goal. But yeah, two really good goals.
Very, very good. And like you say, you touch on that first goal. Topolodge with the ball over the top. But the touch from Olamola was exquisite in the box. And the finish was just timed to perfection. Really, really good. Very different goal, as you say. The second one kind of feeding off scraps, a little bit of a poacher's finish. But actually, that's kind of what you want to see. And I think, personally, he's added a real energy up front for Bromley.
Yeah, he's... Do you know what? It's just something a little bit different. I think he's a target man, and he's that small, energetic figure that you want running around the opposition box. So, yeah, he's definitely going to offer us a different type of player to, say, Adam Marriott, Michael Cheek, George Alexander. So, yeah, I think it's a really good signing.
Absolutely. And, of course, he scored the first goal. Josh Parker equalised for Oxford City from the penalty spot. However, into the second half, Olamola got his second on 65 minutes. And then Louis Dennis, we've got to touch on that quickly, returning to the team with a goal. And it was another great goal. He does tend to score special goals, doesn't he?
Really, really good goal. And just a typical Louis Dennis goal, I think. But, yeah, he'll be happy with that.
Indeed he will. And great to see, actually, the celebrations after, how many people were surrounding Louis and congratulating him and really being supportive and being happy for him, because it has been a tough few weeks with the injury for Louis. But it's great to see that he's now back involved and looking sharp. He came on against Dorking, which we'll talk about in a second, and looked sharp as well. So Olofela Olamola was chosen as the man of the match for that game, unsurprisingly, and took home the bottle of Prosecco. So congratulations to him. But then no real time to necessarily enjoy the result. Andy Woodman wasn't best pleased with the performance. Yeah. His standards are very, very high, and that's fantastic. And, you know, we'll hear from one of our guests later who will confirm that. But we weren't at our best, but I think potentially that's the sign of a good team, Josh, winning when you're not playing at your best against an Oxford side who actually put up a really good performance.
Yeah, do you know what? It was the same Andy Woodman personality that you'd have seen after losing 2-1 away at Yeovil on a Tuesday night. He was, you know, just disappointed and deflated, and we won 3-1. So it just shows how much we've developed in the time he's been here, that he's disappointed with, you know, the performance of a 3-1 win.
Well, anyway, it was 3 points for Bromley, and ultimately that was all that mattered. But the Bromley women went one step further on Sunday, away to Selsey, and they won 8-0. Josh, absolutely incredible.
Yeah, I mean, Selsey, I think, two divisions above as well. Just brilliant. Brilliant. I don't know what else to say about them. Obviously, I was at the game against Welling in midweek, and you could just see it. They're just, you know, levels above now. When last season, they were obviously adapting to a new league, whereas, yeah, they've just found, you know, their home really in that division, and it looks like they'll be on the charge for, you know, another promotion.
Would be brilliant to see, and I think it actually mirrors the men's team quite well in the sense that you've got some experienced players towards the kind of the latter stages of their careers in that team, but you've also got players coming through the girls' academy here at the football club in the women's team, and it kind of mirrors the first team. You know, Andy looks to bring through these young players who are mentored by the experienced players, and the same thing's happening in the women's team. We talk about parallels in terms of results, but the process is kind of the same as well.
It is. I mean, you know, we don't touch on it an awful lot, but there are, you know, group of those girls that have, you know, come through Harry Honour's, you know, under-16s girls, and they've, you know, they've progressed into the women's team. So follow the similar route to, you know, Kellen, Ben Crowhouse, and, you know, it's brilliant to see.
And that, of course, means that they progress, the Bromley women, to the next round of the FA Cup, which is the first round, Josh, taking place on Sunday the 12th of November, and we are at home to AFC Porchester. And just the progression and the results in the FA Cup this year, particularly in the FA Cup, all over in general, but particularly in the FA Cup, have been pretty special, haven't they, from the Bromley women?
Yeah, they have, and I think Porchester are a little bit of an easier opposition than Selsey, and obviously, you know, the home form this season has just been incredible. So, you know, I don't want to jinx anything, but I can only see it go one way, I think.
Well, fingers crossed, and we'll keep you posted with developments on that one. But very best of luck to the women in that FA Cup first round fixture. Great to see that both the women's and the men's teams have got big FA Cup games coming up. Of course, the women's just 8 days later than the men's game. We've touched on the Blackpool tickets for sale, but don't forget you can also come down and support the women in that FA Cup game on Sunday the 12th of November. Further details to be confirmed very soon, but please do come down and get behind them as they look to progress even further in this competition and carry on the fantastic form that they are in this season. Just touching on something community-wise, and it's been a brilliant couple of weeks, which comes to a conclusion tomorrow on Friday for our October soccer camp. We've welcomed over 90 children on pretty much every single day of the October school holidays across those 2 weeks. And we've had player visits, which have been absolutely fantastic. Josh, you've done a great job at capturing those. But we really do have a group of players now who are really committed to getting involved in these community visits, aren't they? And they actually enjoy going out there. I saw Callum Reynolds put something out about, you know, the fact that he enjoyed it and that he found it an interesting experience. It is really, really great to see. And, you know, these players, they want to get involved in things like this.
Yeah, they do. And I think as well, it's, you know, the look on kids' faces when, like, obviously it's Bromley players talking about playing for Bromley, but when you've got players such as Kido, Alex Kirk and Teddy Sharman, though, when, you know, when the coaches describe their careers and give the kids a bit of background, they're always surprised that, you know, we've got Chelsea and Arsenal players playing for their local team. And yeah, I mean, the players can't help but get involved, and I think some of the coaching techniques have been brilliant. I think we've we've got a few future coaches, I think, coming up. And we said that about Scott Wagstaff, didn't we, when he was doing it.
So. Look at what he's doing and look where he's doing it.
There you go.
Brilliant to see. So the community soccer camp comes to an end tomorrow. That's Friday the 27th of October, but we'll be back at Christmas. So in that little break between the schools breaking up and the Christmas break, we will be putting on a little soccer camp. So if you do have children who are interested in playing football, want to come along and join us, keep your eyes on the website and social media for details of that, which will be coming very, very soon indeed. And thank you to all of the coaches, all of the players, and of course, all of the parents and children who've attended the soccer camp. It's been absolutely brilliant to see. Now, the match against Oxford City wasn't the only game at the Relocatum Community Stadium across the past few days. We, of course, welcomed Dorking Wanderers to the Relocatum Community Stadium on Tuesday night. That was the 24th of October. And a real close game again, Josh. We said the Oxford game was close. This one, even more so.
Do you know what? I thought Dorking were a good team, but you know, I think they kept the ball well, but didn't create that much danger, I don't think. I think they were just a good passing team. And, you know, I think Andy says, like, he doesn't want to be a passing team. He wants to, you know, attack. And, I mean, that's why we won at the end of the day. But, yeah, I think Dorking were a good team. And, you know, if it had ended a draw, wouldn't have been the end of the world, but yeah, it was unbelievable ending.
It was, wasn't it? I mean, you look at the way the game started, of course, an unfortunate error from Bromley at the back to present Dorking with the opener. And really, that was the most that Grant Smith was tested all night. You talked about Dorking moving and passing the ball really, really well, but Grant Smith didn't really have to make any top-class saves like we saw him do against Oxford City, for example, and numerous games previous to this season. Earlier this season. But in terms of the actual football down the other end as well, of course, Deji Lerroway equalised for Bromley within the first 15 minutes after going 1-0 down. Really and truly, we probably didn't test Harrison Mayle enough in the Dorking Wanderers goal until, obviously, the second goal.
No, I think Lewis Lee had a couple of chances, didn't he? I remember one of his shots deflecting onto the roof of the net. I think Feller had a shot that went wide. But, yeah, other than that, it was pretty... Yeah, there wasn't really much in it, but, I mean, play right until the end and you get your reward if you stay switched on, and that's what we did.
Fight till the end, like you say there, Josh, and the finish from Corey Whiteley. Bit of a strange goal in strange circumstances, but virtually the last meaningful kick of the game. I mean, Dorking took the centre after that and the referee immediately blew the whistle. So 5 minutes, or a minimum of 5 minutes, were signalled. Corey Whiteley spotting the goalkeeper off his line and just cutting inside past the challenge and then unleashing a kind of lobbed effort over the goalkeeper. And it was a really good way to finish the game, Josh, and absolute scenes in the stadium.
Yeah, I mean, did you think it was a foul? If that was the other way around...
I think we'd feel frustrated. I can certainly see the frustration from Dorking. That said, if the goalkeeper catches the ball, it's going to be given as a foul. But the fact he's had the momentum with him punching through the ball has perhaps cast doubt into the referee's mind, or if he'd have just stayed put. You know, we talked about the goalkeeper during the commentary coming out halfway into his own half at numerous points during the game. It's a risky tactic, and unfortunately for him, it's cost Dorking Wanderers. Whether it's a foul or not, it wouldn't be happening if he wasn't on the edge of his box. And he didn't need to be. You know, the defender, Fuller, should have cleared the ball the first time. The goalkeeper shouldn't need to be in that position. So
he was going for the punch anyway, wasn't he?
Yeah, he was.
He wasn't coming to collect it.
No, which is probably the reason the referee hasn't given it, in all honesty. If he catches it, it's a foul, right? But because you're punching the ball, you've got that momentum going forwards. Yeah. I guess the referee's seen it as more of a collision between the two players than cheek, perhaps causing a foul. Yeah. But anyway, you can't take anything away from Corey Whiteley for the finish.
And the noise when that went in as well. Unbelievable. I've not heard that here ever. I think probably Cheeky's goal against York in the trophy semi-final. But yeah, I think since I've been here, that was probably one of the loudest reactions to a goal.
Indeed it was. And anyway, it's another good result for Bromley, who currently sit third in the table on 32 points, 1 point ahead of Solihull Moors and 7 points behind second place Barnet, 9 points behind league leaders Chesterfield, who are on 41 points. Talking of games coming up now, of course, we head to Kingfield on Saturday as we take on Woking. They're currently sat 10th in the Vanarama National League, having played 17 games, and they're on 22 points, so 10 points below Bromley. However, they sealed an impressive 1-0 victory away to Eastleigh on Tuesday, so they'll be coming into this one in high spirits. And Josh, I'm looking back at last season. We saw two matches away to Woking, and they were two very different performances, I think, from Bromley.
Yeah, and I think we said at the time, didn't we, they're probably the toughest team that we came up against. I think obviously we played Wrexham and Notts County, but other than them, I think Woking were, you know, that other team where when we had to come up against them in the playoffs, a part of us thought, do you know what, this might be Woking's night. And yeah, I think that night we just showed we wanted it a little bit more. They had, you know, good, they do have good noise at home, and but that way following that night was unbelievable, and it helped the lads get that win. Yeah, hopefully it's similar on Saturday. But yeah, they're definitely a tough team, and I think they will be for until, you know, they move up to League Two. They're just going to keep, you know,
keep trying, being consistent.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, we know Darren Soule's a very experienced manager at this level and has teams that are very tough to break down, very strong, very direct, very organised. So I'm sure that is going to be a tough game for Bromley on Saturday. But look, we'll go into it with all the belief that we've shown in the last few games. And fingers crossed, Josh, we can get a good away support. Looking back at that playoff game, 900 or so Bromley fans there, just shy of 1,000, I think, actually, was unbelievable support of the night. You talk about the noise. But when that goal went in from Deji Leraway that night, it was absolute scenes.
Unbelievable. And yeah, like you said, hopefully it is a good following on Saturday. I think ticket prices rise on the gate. So if you are debating whether to go, just get your tickets now, because you don't want to be paying £2-3 extra on the day. So yeah, get them now, support the boys. And if we win, it'll be a big one and keeps Woking away from those playoff spots.
The chasing pack.
Because we don't want to be playing Woking again in
the
playoffs.
No, we don't. There are a few teams, actually. Well, most of the teams we don't want to play. It's a very, very tough league, isn't it? But of course, before the big one in the FA Cup next week, which we've talked about already, there is another home game. Josh alluded to it earlier on. It is, of course, our return into the London Senior Cup, which will take place on Tuesday, the 31st of October, kick-off 7:45 p.m. at the Relocatum Community Stadium as Bromley take on Redbridge. And that is our Football for a Fiver evening. So entry just £5 for everyone that night, which is a fantastic offering from the club and a good opportunity for you to come down and see a game which I'm sure will involve a few young players and also some players that need match time, because we'll talk to Andy about it later, but there's a bigger squad now than we've seen previously. Got to try and keep everyone as fit as we can, I guess, and it's a challenge, isn't it?
Yeah, I mean, I spoke to Roy, obviously you were away for that one, but we touched on the London Senior Cup and I sort of asked him who he's expected to play, and I think going off the local cups over the past couple of years, it has been a bit of a mixture. I think we're going to see a lot more players from the 21s playing, but I think the 21s are playing Friday. I'm not sure if there's going to be a fixture change there, but at the minute, I think they're playing on the Friday.
Yes, yeah, it does change that every so often, by the way. So it isn't quite like the National League fixtures where everything is announced well ahead of time in July. These things do chop and change quite late on, don't they? So we will, of course, confirm details of that when we can. But yeah, fingers crossed.
I can't see many senior players playing purely because of the, you know, magnitude of the game on Saturday.
Absolutely. However, but, you know, you've got to also keep these players fit and on their toes, haven't you? So there's a real balance, and we'll talk to Andy about that later on and hear his thoughts on that. But before that, we've got to mention the amazing women's team in fantastic form. Are back at home this Sunday, the 29th of October, as they face Herne Bay. Remember, club members, you can enter that one for free. And if you just want a football fix and you want to see a good footballing team who are just smashing goals in left, right and centre every week, come on down and watch the Bromley women. You won't regret it. Very best of luck to them in that game. Josh, I think we're going to take it away with our interviews now. We've got three guests, not forgetting the incredible Roy Oliver. We're also joined by Andy Woodman, as per usual, on the podcast. And we've got another special guest, haven't we? I'm going to wait for people to find out that one. I'm not going to mention his name now. Here it is. This week on the podcast, we are delighted to be joined by a very, very important member of the backroom team of Andy Woodman, and someone who has been very, very busy this season. It's someone actually who, when we've spoken to people about the podcast, and I mean this genuinely, Josh, you'll back me up here, people have asked to hear from this person. I've told him that on his way up here, and it's made him sweat a little bit more because he feels the pressure now.
Sure.
It's Huss Torgert. Huss, welcome to the podcast. You pleased to be here?
Yeah, very pleased to be here. I've been dodging you well for half a season, but couldn't escape today.
I was going to say, we have been trying to get you on for some time now. You've had a very, very busy couple of weeks, and we'll talk about that more a little bit later. But thanks so much for joining us. You've been here now for how long?
Two and a half seasons now. This is my third season at the club.
Flying by, hasn't it?
Hasn't it so quick, yeah.
So, Huss, what is your job title and what's the day-to-day like for you? As I know every day is different and things get thrown at you, but what's your kind of day-to-day like?
So I'm the head of injury management at the club, and in essence that's exactly what I do. I manage the injury, so from the point a player's injured on the pitch until they kind of get to the stage where they're back out on the pitch training, to them be involved in getting their match and training levels back up to speed. That's the kind of process that I manage, really. And obviously that can depend on severity as well. So it could be something that's a couple of days, or it could be something similar to a couple of injuries. We've had bigger injuries that require an operation, and then kind of getting that rehab right, planning the operations, who we're going to use, etc. So that's my job, injuries only, really.
And how long have you been doing this for in your whole career? Was it something you started, you know, after leaving your education? Did you have another career before that?
Yeah, so no, literally come out of uni. And my first job was at my home club at Tamworth, which was 14 years ago now. So a good while. And since then, I've always worked in football, both up and down the pyramid, to be fair. So I've had a couple of part-time roles at some really good clubs with some really good people as well. And then some fully professional clubs. I worked at Charlton for a good while, and Barnet previously when they were in the league as well. So, 14 years up and down the spectrum, really.
And you joined us from Dover Athletic, didn't you?
Yeah, Dover, yeah, absolutely. Dover had their troubles, obviously, through COVID. It was well documented, and kind of it really hit the club hard. And as it did many people, really, and through that it kind of released me to kind of be a free agent, focus on my own clinic and stuff, and I was actually done with football. I thought I could make good money and be popular and busy with my own injury clinic, but the only club that I would work for, which was the club in the closest proximity to me and one that was growing at a big rate, was Bromley. I wasn't expecting the job to come about, and all of a sudden it did. And things progressed quite quickly, and here I am, really.
I remember it happening, actually, and it was quite a coup to get you in, actually, given you all your experience. What was it that drew you here? You talked about the forward thinking and the growing nature of the club, but what was it ultimately that brought you on board?
I think when I first joined Dover, the levels weren't a million miles apart. So Dover at the time, Hess took over. We were full-time. I remember we played Bromley over the Christmas and festive period, a couple of games, and we won one at Dover, and I remember thinking they're a really good team. I remember thinking I like how the club portrays itself on its travels, the branding, the people and the amount of staff they had. It seemed very resourceful but not wasteful, and I thought that's really, really what you want to be like, really. If you're going to aspire to push into the league, you have to kind of overachieve first and foremost. And I thought Bromley were doing that. And then obviously coming to the ground, seeing the development of the Glyn Beverley stand and seeing what it is now. I mean, we're used to that on a day-to-day basis, but when you were seeing it being built, there's not many clubs in the National League that have took on infrastructure projects like this, really. I can't think of many at all that kind of give you the foothold and the hierarchy to be able to push and attract better players and better staff. And that was really, really exciting to see. The first tours of the place when this was a building site, you could see the floodlights being upgraded and all the little things that you think don't matter too much actually matter quite a bit, really.
Not everyone has that kind of reference point, but you'll have come here with Dover and other clubs in the past and been in the old tunnel, and you know, even compare that, you've got your own little treatment room, haven't you, in the players' tunnel. And you've also got a dedicated physio space within the gym in the Glyn Beverley stand.
Yeah, we've got our own dedicated space now, and it's purposely built to cater for kind of the larger numbers of players, the 21s and the larger number of squads and kind of the academy as well. So it's a really, really modern space that we're working in that kind of facilitates the level of treatment that we need to provide for the players and the club wide, really. And you can also see that the kind of the restrictions to the infrastructure we had when we were a smaller club, which is not discommon to some of the clubs that you still go around and see. Having one treatment bed that kind of has to sit up against the wall, that's just concrete buildings, you can't help that. But to see where we were and where we are now, it's miles apart, and hand on heart, what we can offer now as a product of kind of sports medicine to our players and our stakeholders as fans in the injury clinic and stuff is absolutely outstanding. It easily completes with some of the bigger clubs that we see, some on our travels, but Charlton locally, our infrastructure is very similar to Charlton, I would say, and they're a few leagues above us, obviously, but we can deal with more therapists, more players, more injuries, and provide a better service all the way through, really, because of the fantastic facilities we've got here.
And what's it been like being part of Andy Woodman's backroom team?
Oh yeah, it's really, really good. Gaffer keeps everyone on his toes as well. He drives such a hard standard, and just when you think you've cracked it and you've got it, he'll kind of raise the bar again and demand more and more and more off you. And it's good to give it. You really feel like it brings the best out of you, and that's club wide as well. He demands the same of the players, and we set our standards to Gaffer's kind of standard. And it echoes all the way through the club. It's really enjoyable. We have some laughs as well. And enjoy the ride, really.
Talking of laughs, you've really been loving these post-match photos after we win games.
they're my favourite, really. It's always... I've played with some great people and under some great managers as well, and they've always taught me the same thing, that when you win, you need to mark a win. Respectfully and humbly, of course, so you shouldn't be rubbing it in opposition's faces, which I don't think we do, but we celebrate our wins and we move on quickly after. The photos are great, and I think at the end of the season it'd be great to see all the photos of all the wins, especially if we can achieve something this season, and just see it in a timeline flicking through, and it'll be an instant timeline to the games that we've come through, really.
His brain's whirring now, Josh, over here.
Yeah, I'll do your job. Don't worry, mate. He's taking some notes.
But you've now got to the point where it's not only you. You know, we look back at years previous. It's when you started just yourself, you know, and previous physiotherapists and people in that department. It's been one person, but now you've kind of got a little team there, haven't you?
Yeah, very much so. One that I'm really, really proud of, all of my team. We've got... how many would you say? I think we've got 7 all in all. Now, that's not made up of full-time staff. It's made up of internships and kind of people we can give opportunity and exposure to of a full-time medical department, which is going to benefit them. A lot of the people that we work with on a season-to-season basis then move on to clubs in and around us, so maybe a league below, maybe the same league. And our network grows within that, and that's only for the benefit of the club, really. These are people that we work together with, we can socialise with, and can text any minute to get feedback off any players. and help each other out and really, really get a nice, tight network, really. But our team's unbelievable. And we cover a broad range of spectrums as well. So people see physio some people may see physio as a one solitary department or kind of workload, but people have different kind of characteristics which fit different injuries. Some people are soft tissue specialists and they're better clinically on beds working with players. Some people are better in the gym. Some people are better returning to play. And thankfully, we're in a position where our department can cater for all of those things in abundance, really.
I guess it's a really difficult question to answer. I'm going to ask it anyway. It's quite a broad one. When a player gets injured, what is your process? What do you do?
Okay, so obviously, first and foremost, we need to make sure that it's nothing serious. So when we're on the pitch, in essence, that's one of the easier part of the jobs, really. It's either a thumbs up or a thumbs down to see if they can continue to play. Again, if it's nothing serious, if it is something serious, then we're in a position where we can action that and try and help them back to a recovery. If it's something that's not life or limb threatening, but they can't carry on, then we'll kind of get them assessed. We'll make our diagnosis and what the injury will be. From that point, we can either get a further diagnosis. We might need a scan. We might need a surgical opinion, for example. And from there, we will plot a rehab path and provide them with treatment on a daily basis. Injuries don't get a day off here. They work 7 days a week to get back as much as they can, really. And so, yeah, once they're kind of on a pathway where they're healing, we set their objectives, what they have to hit on a day-to-day basis, whether it be strengthening, whether it be reducing pain, whether it be range of motion, and then build them up to a point where we can hit their data that they took when they were fit in pre-season. And once we hit them levels, we can kind of move outside and then start looking at the more specific football things. For example, a winger or a fullback may need to be able to cross it. Centre-halves may be able to jump a little bit more. All of these. We tick all the boxes, really, in regards to how these people play the game specifically. And then once we can match all of our data up, then they're fit to return to play, really.
So much more goes into it than I think a lot of people think. One of the things is I've got a great view of the bench on a home match day. And what is the process? So if a player goes down, yeah, what happens? Because I see you get to your feet and then you've got the traditional physio sprint onto the pitch,
yeah,
straight over to the player, which is just a trademark physio thing, isn't
yeah,
it?
Yeah.
But how does that kind of, because you have to obviously get permission to enter the pitch as well, don't you?
So obviously I sit to the side of the dugout because first and foremost, you need to be in a position where you can see. Now, our bench is quite animated. It's got larger than the life characters in it, really. So if you're sitting directly on the bench, it's actually very difficult to see past the gaffer, Dunny, and Steve, Brenda as well, Brannan, I beg your pardon, his nickname. yeah, I'm letting out all the secrets here, aren't I?
Just cottoned on that one over the years, hasn't it?
Yeah, as yeah. indeed, yeah. So getting where you can see the injury, and that's half of dealing with the injury because you can see the mechanisms of the injury. And then you want to be in a position where you can action that as quick as possible, really. So you wait for the referee to call you on. I like to kind of get a, not a head start as such, but I want to be in a position where I can access the player as quick as and directly as possible. And then enter the pitch and kind of get that process underway, really. With that kind of the tricks of the trade, you can run a little bit quicker or slower depending on how the game's going and what you may need. If we're under the cosh a little bit, you might want to take a little bit of a slower jog if you know it's nothing too serious, so they can get, so the gaffer can get his point across to the boys when they're having a quick drink of water as well. So it's just part of managing the game, really. But that's in essence what we can do. And then once we get to the player, we decide, can he continue or not? Is it anything serious or not? And then we make the decision and communicate that to the bench, whether we may need a change or we might need to see him for 5 minutes or withdraw him from the game.
I've seen it actually quite a lot, particularly in the National League, where physio departments, particularly with a more serious injury, have worked together. And I guess it's kind of nice that your counterparts at other clubs will come on and support and you'll do vice versa for an opposition player. if it's needed. And we've seen that on quite a few occasions, actually, over the past couple of years.
Yeah, very much so. So we have an emergency action plan, or a medical emergency action plan, that we have for the players on the pitch. And that's anything as serious to a cardiac arrest or a kind of a collapse on the pitch, or something less serious like a dead leg that the player might not be able to continue with. But we have delegated people for delegated roles to deal with them scenarios, which we practice quite often. When other teams' physios come to us, they kind of slot into my role. So they'll be the top of our pyramid, obviously in regards to their players. And we extend our medical facilities knowledge and availability to them, really. Regardless of scores and stuff, we're medical practitioners, and player safety and welfare is what we should practice, really. So we try to do that as best as we can to the opposition when they come here.
One thing you and I liaison quite a lot of the time, and have done so quite a few times this season, is medicals.
Yeah.
Players who are signing, and obviously that is a step that has to be taken before any paperwork is signed. What is that process? I imagine some people would want to know a bit more about that. What happens? The player walks in the building and you're the first kind of the first official that they go to. What's that process?
So it's in essence a medical screen, really. That's what we're trying to do. There's no golden rule with medicals. And I remember this point very clearly before I started uni. I was like, cool, I wonder what's in a medical. But it kind of varies from club to club. And obviously with the resources available to you, will differ in terms of depths as well. In essence, at Bromley Football Club, what we're looking at is injury histories. So we want people with ideally no injury history. But realistically, that's not going to happen at this level of football. You come across people who are very young and don't have an injury history, or they've been at a couple of clubs and may have an injury history that we need to look after. So we look at that. We look at their cardiac screening to see that they're well and they're up to date. We look at different kind of strength tests and range of motion tests to see if anything flags up in terms of deficits. And this isn't necessarily with a view to cancelling a deal or to put in a scupper in a deal. It's more a case of how we can work to make these athletes better. Can we get them working more efficiently than they have them previously to give them a better kind of output for the club, really? And we've had varied success with that. Harry Forster, when I first come to the club, was renowned to having hamstring injuries. And he won't mind me saying that as well. I know Harry very well before he moved on. And what we ended up doing was working with Harry. Shot gaffers around the corner. So I say,
peering through the window here. Even more pressure.
Only said nice things.
Yeah, the best things, gaffer. Yeah, so Harry was one that we worked with really successfully. He was up at 57% availability for matches and training, and worked his absolute socks off. Took on our advice and applied what we were doing, and we got to 97% the next season, which he played a big part of, and managed to get a move for himself. So good luck to him. But that's the kind of pathway that we try and find, really. Not saying that everyone's broken that we get and we try and mend them, but more a case of we try and get value from our medicals to give us a pathway in which we can try and improve a professional footballer.
Let's finish on the football side of things. And what have you made of the season so far with, you know, the improvement in the squad compared to last year and then obviously the year before that? What's it been like for you to watch?
I think it's been really good. And I can see a kind of difference having been here for a couple of years. There's games that we just simply would have fizzled out of. We would have lost that we were then drawing last year. We'd have lost a few of the games 1-0, I guarantee it. Last season, we drew them games 1-1, and this season we seem to be winning them games 2-1, so there's progress on that as well, which is great for the boys. It brings great momentum and camaraderie within the boys as well. But then with the larger squad as well, you can see, I think the gaffer and the recruitment team have been really, really astute in adjusting their mentalities as well, because the amount of injury time that we were playing at the start of the season equated to another two games, and it was really taking the tolls on the boys. You could see it really, really obviously, and kind of getting the extra bodies in nice and early has given us that freedom to be able to rotate with strength, obviously. And it brings the injuries down, and we can rest players where we need to and monitor minutes where we need to. And it's made it my job a lot easier, really, a lot easier with that, having them on board and kind of that management. But yeah, if we can carry on how we're going, then you never know what might be the case. But we won't rest on our laurels. We'll keep working hard to get where we need to get to keep the run going and to keep the form going, really.
And compared to other clubs you've been to, what's it been like to work with these set of players?
Yeah, our boys here are an absolute dream. We do body fats every first of the month, and we don't have anyone above 10% now. Normally, I'm not hardly one person to be saying anything about body fats indeed, but we'd be chasing a few players. We'd have to put extra measures in place. Now, the culture within the group is excellent. It's really, really self-driven, strong. Morally strong as well, and decent people. So people kind of fit into the group really, really well. The group then creates its own momentum and drives its own standards. And anyone who falls by the wayside, unfortunately, kind of doesn't keep pace with that group. So it's a well-oiled machine, really. But they're a great bunch, real great bunch.
And just to finish off, you're a Villa supporter, aren't you?
Yeah.
How have you made of this season so far?
Yeah, Villa are flying as well. I think the stars are aligned somewhere along the way. So hopefully, if Villa have a great season, probably have a great season, then it's a winner all round. But yeah, I follow Villa as well. I think it keeps you're fresh to be a fan as well. So I think it's a bit of an insurance policy as well. If Bromley don't ever win, then I always check Villa as my insurance to have a good weekend still. So
can I just jump in before we finish? You talked there, something struck me with what you said about players recovering from injuries. It's not just, I guess, the physical element, but it can actually be really tough mentally for these players to be out for prolonged periods of time, and they can start to lose belief and get a bit down. And I guess, is that kind of part of your job to not look after them necessarily just in the physical way, but to kind of boost them as well? As of course the fellow teammates do that as well.
Yeah, absolutely. The psychology of an injury is actually quite difficult to understand with different people, I beg your pardon, as well. But it's very, very important to be able, and again, going back to our previous point of having a bigger team, having a bed, not waiting a turn for a slot on a bed, but having a bed and then having a therapist delegated to you, feeling like you're one of the team still, even though you're injured, is massive in terms of that psychology. Getting people back and kind of utilising our resources, whether it be the meeting rooms, to kind of break down play or study different injuries and case studies. It's really, really important and not that well documented, really. It's something that we could do more so, especially at National League level where resources differ as well. But the mental aspect of the time of the game and of injuries, you can get people back on that alone, really. Alone, because recovery is recovery. They will recover. The body will naturally recover, but they need to be in the right position to achieve the same levels that they had pre-injury, especially with some of the long-term injuries. And the mental aspect of that is huge.
Well, Huss, thank you so much for joining us. I could go on all day with this.
That was really good.
I think it's brilliant to have you on, and it's great to have your team and yourself here at the football club, and you all do a phenomenal job. So thank you for coming on and speaking to us about your day-to-day.
Thank you for having me and up the Brom.
We're delighted to be joined by the gaffer, Andy Woodman, on Ravens Weekly. Andy, welcome back. Let's start off then with the weekend just gone, two home games, and you were quite clear after that Oxford City game. Despite the result, you didn't feel we were at our best at all.
No, I didn't feel we played great against Oxford City. Watching it back, maybe I was a little bit harsh, but I think you've got City standards, and we're not always going to play well. I get that, but we was better than we shown, I thought, on the day, and it could quite easily swung the other way if Grant hadn't made that save. So I want to make sure we don't sort of sit on our laurels a little bit and start thinking we're a really good team and we can just walk up and rock up and win. So, you know, that, and the lads are good. They took it on board and they agreed. And, you know, we're back to work on Sunday and Monday, ready for the Tuesday game. And I thought it was a completely different performance Tuesday.
was just going to say, yeah, that result is an impressive one. Dorking didn't put in a bad performance, but especially to win it and to persist all the way till the end and win it with the last kick of the game is an incredible feeling, isn't it?
It's brilliant. I mean, look, we all like a last-minute stroke, last-second winner. You know, there's nothing better than that. But I thought what was good is we were so disciplined in what we did. And I keep saying it, you know, people get a bit disgruntled. Why aren't you running at the top of the pitch, running around? Well, they're just going to play around you. You know, it's quite simple logic what they're trying to do. But if we sit in our slots and say, come on in, what you got? They can't do it, you know, and then that's when we're at our most dangerous. I thought we got the game plan spot on, and obviously the results, you know, proves that. So we're never going to be one of those teams, Matt. I have to be honest with you. It's just going to keep the ball for the sake of keeping the ball. I don't really see the logic in that at this level. Don't get me wrong. When you go to the Premier League, I completely get the logic. It is, you know, you're playing against top teams and top players and you don't want them having the ball. So yeah, but the actual outcome was perfect for us on Tuesday against a Dorking side that I think are not bad. I have to be honest with you. I think Mark's got that team firing. He underplays in his interviews how good they are. It's very clever because they're not bad. Let me tell you, for a team that's not long been up at this level, they're all right. And he knows what he's doing. So I felt that was a slippery, tricky game for us, and we got the margins at the end.
He took the goal well, didn't he, Corey Whitelin? He's someone who just, he looks fitter than ever. He just seems to be at one end of the pitch at one moment. Split second later, he's down the other end. What do you make of him so far this season?
Well, he'd be hard pushed to say he's not my best signer, to be honest. And that's no disrespect to anybody, but what he gives us, his output, is phenomenal. He's low maintenance, gets on with it. He's a joy to work with every day, and he gives you everything all the time. He can only play one way and train one way, and he's been brilliant, Corey. And I've been mocking him about his finishing a little bit. You know, it's a bit erratic sometimes. But he took that spot on, and I'm always bantering him about having to whip things and drive things and curve things, and, you know, and that was one of those moments where he had to put a little bit more than just float it in because he would have got cleared, and he nailed it right at a critical time for us.
And one of your most recent signings, Olofela Olamola, has been here for 2.5 weeks now. He's weighed in with some assists and a couple of goals against Oxford City as well. What have you made of him so far?
Has he only been here 2.5 weeks?
Yeah.
That's mental. I feel like he's been here a lifetime. He's settled so well. Yeah, look, he works hard. We're a hard-working team. We need to have that. He grafts. He holds the ball up. He brings others into play, and now he's put a couple of goals on his tally. So, you know, for me, great signing that. I'm really chuffed about, you know, you call him Ola, I call him fella. He's been great. Stepped in. Looks like he just wants to improve as well. Works hard in training, and he's trying to get better at everything he does.
And looking back at that 13-game unbeaten run, you stuck with the same team wherever you could during that run. More recently, you've kind of rotated a little bit, haven't you?
Yeah, but I felt... I think at some point, as a manager, you've got to... You want to stick with a winning team and you want to be loyal to that team. You also know that there's a moment where, if you do that, you are going to get beat. It's kind of a weird sort of mindset. So you have to sort of freshen up at some point, and it's a gamble then, because everyone says, why did you change the team? But I could just feel I wouldn't say complacency, I just felt, right, now's the time to just freshen up a couple. And we're now going into, you know, we was at the sort of tail end of a lot of games, and I think it's good, keeps it healthy, and we'll do it again. You know, there'll be changes again now. At some point. So it's important. It's about the squad. You know, it's 1 to 11 is great if it's winning, but we've got a sort of 1 to 20 that could play on our team, which is something we've not had before, and that's really important.
What's it like for you as a manager to see, obviously, Callum Reynolds, even Teddy, to be fair, sitting out of these games? What's it like for you to deal with? Is it hard work compared to having, like, a smaller squad, or do they just adapt to it?
Yeah. Easier? Well, look, we've gone on about this. I've gone on about this South African mentality, the rugby team. And if anyone's been looked at him closely, and I have, because I've got a daughter-in-law that is South African. she's big on the South Africans. So I've really looked at his team. And, you know, the manager there, he's bordering genius stroke crackers. The game last week, he took the whole team off, you know, against England and literally subbed the best players. And I was thinking, what is he doing? And he brought on what he calls the bum squad. Now, the bum squad, people would think, is a squad of players that are left out and they've been bombed. No, not in the South African. The bum squad's a team that comes off the bench that's going to smash up the other team and make a difference. So I've kind of been drip-feeding this into the guys a little bit, and I've been looking at me as if I'm crackers myself. But it's important. The boys that are not in the team, they've got to come into the team and perform and keep this energy around the group. So when I'm looking at Callum Reynolds and I'm looking at... you know, Vennings and Jude Arthurs and all of that. You know, it's I don't get any pleasure out of leaving any of these boys out. But what I do know is when I look them in the eye, I know that they are training right on point. They are ready to come in and they're going to grab their chance. And that's really the mentality I want to put in the group. Anyone that knows me, I'm never going to leave a player out just because I've got the hump with him or I don't like him as a person or... we've had a few words. I'm not that sort of guy. I want all these boys to have fantastic careers and be winners. And that's now going through the group. So I think it has its problems when you've got a bigger group, but I'd much sooner have a bigger group than sort of do it on a shoestring, you know, bare 14 players and a couple of kids in there, because that is hard work. And one injury and then you're going to run of losing, and that's hard.
I mean, you said there about taking a whole team off, and I'm sure that I'll agree. I think it just shows the quality in the squad. And I was thinking this Tuesday night, if all of those players were replaced with their respective replacements, it's still such a strong team to put out.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I think that's a credit to you and, you know, the recruitment there. But, yeah, I think just the squad as a whole this season has just been so strong.
I wanted to be in a position when I got this job. My mindset was when I got a manager's job, I want to have two number ones in every position. So two number one goalies, two starters as right backs or right wing back, two in every position that they could both start. Obviously, you know, I get the job and I realise finances don't always lay to have that, and it's a bit of a luxury. So we've tried to get the best players we can and then hopefully get lucky with injuries. We tried that in the past and that's worked. And then we've got bitten with that. I tried that, you know, the other year with Cookie and the goalie, and then he got injured and we, you know, so I've tried all these ways to split the budget up. This year I've done it a little bit different. I've really got in depth to clubs and they've helped me out with players and we've worked hard behind the scenes to get the right characters in and right players and recruit well. And it's allowed me a much better chance of almost having that perfect, you know, two starters in every position. And I think it's so important to look at Chesterfield. I mean, against us, they left six out against us and put another six in, and they were still a good team. And I'd like to be in that position where I could leave six out and put another six in, and we look a good team still. And that is the fact of it. You're going to, over a course of 9 months of football, you're going to need that.
I'm moving on to Woking on Saturday. Obviously, they're another tough team. What have you made of their start of the season?
I don't take too much notice to anyone's start. I know people might find, yeah, of course you don't. I don't. I very rarely look at the table. That might surprise you. I very rarely. I know where we are at the moment, but I don't sit there and look at it. Think, oh, if we do this, I just look at it now and again. I know where we've got to get to. And as for Woking, look, I know, forget the manager, forget the team they're going to put out. It's a tough place to go. It's always going to be a tough place to go. It's probably one of the probably most traditional non-league clubs in this league, in my opinion. I played there when I was years ago on loan at a non-league team and I always found it a tough place to go. It'll be a hard game. And forget the manager and the team that you can put out, that'll be hard. So whatever start they've had and where they are in the league, they won the other night, they're going to be tough. And I think you can overanalyze everyone else you're playing and start looking for they're good at this and they're good at that. Oh, let's just worry about us. And I think I saw it the other day, someone posted, we're just taking care of our business. And that's what we've got to do. you know, we've got to just take care of our business. Don't get involved in anyone else's business. What they're doing at Woking's up to them. What they're doing at Eastleigh and et cetera, et cetera, that's up to them. Let's just worry about what we do at Little Bromley and we'll be all right.
We had Huss Turgot on the podcast
How
earlier.
How boring is he? Oh.
You popped your head in and you popped straight out. Because you weren't enjoying that.
He's proper boring, isn't he?
In all seriousness, he was very complimentary about working under you and as being a part of your team. He's been quite a busy boy, hasn't he, this season, to be fair to him.
Well, listen. I'll give you a different spin on it. Let me tell you, but I'm not on camera. Huss is great. Look, I always bat Huss. He's like, he's always involved in everything. He's always around. He's a classic physio. You know, their rooms are really, all joking aside, their rooms are a really important room because that's where the players congregate to. That's where they have all their chats, their moans, their groans, and Huss really keeps that room, you know, vibrant. And I wouldn't say this, but I always know if there's a real serious problem down there that I need to know about, it'll find its way to me. That's not to say that he's ever, you know, dobbed on anyone, or not, but it's important that that room is like a safe zone for the players to go in there and moan about me and I'm not doing this and the manager's not picking me and all that and get it off their chest. That's fine. I don't want to know about that. But if there's generally a real problem with a player and it might be something, nothing to do with football, I get to know about it because I might go out on the pitch one day and just moan at that player and something deep has gone on that I don't know about and we get a reaction. So it's such an important room down there and I always say that to Haas and whoever's working down there. And the lads love him. You've seen him where he's an important part for this football club. And I'm glad you interviewed him, to be honest. I mean, you'll probably get a load of people switch off halfway through.
Just thinking, like you did.
But no, he's an important fixture of one, this football club, and an important member of my staff. And a lot of his stuff, it goes unnoticed until he tells you, because he will tell you. And he goes, it's an unsung, you know, sort of job being a physio, because all you normally do is deliver bad news to the manager. And the manager's reaction is normally blaming the physio, and it's his fault. But yeah, he's great, Huss.
I just wanted to touch on, we always talk about the support on a Tuesday night, but something significant about that was that I believe it was our highest Tuesday night crowd in a competitive game since February 2022. And the atmosphere was really good. It's starting to get kind of a bit colder now on the Tuesday nights, but there does seem to be, and I don't know if you see it from where you're stood, but there seems to be something about football under floodlights at this place. I don't know what it is. I've seen it for years. Can't put my finger on it.
Yeah, well, I can. I think the facilities are fantastic, first and foremost. If you're going to go out on a Tuesday night and you want to grab a beer or a burger and catch a little bit of football, you're going to be hard-pressed to find better facilities than we've got. You've got a team that's winning and a team that's lost 1 in 16. So that's kind of attracts a few. And then you've got that sort of dampness on the pitch. So you know it's going to be a quick game on our pitch. So on a Tuesday night, when it's a bit of dew on there, it's going to be a quick game. So there's a nice little combination now, I think, for anyone to go out on a Tuesday night and take their kids out and not get home too late. So there's a nice mix there. I really noticed it the other night. I really noticed it. And I thought the noise at the end when we scored was brilliant, you know, and that was nice. But we want to keep them coming. You know, we want to get this crowd up. I want them to tell their mates, look, we're going to go down to Bromley today. Something's going on down there. And this is not a sales pitch. You haven't asked me to do this, but I really feel that people are missing something here, something good. So don't jump on it too late. And make sure, just if you are watching this, make sure you just say to a friend, I'm going to take you to Bromley. Come and have a look at my team for once, because I'm telling you, they'll be surprised. They'll go away buzzing. I've done it to a load of people. Yeah, pop down. I'll see you after. They're thinking they're coming down to a muddy old pitch and a non-league shindig, and they're going away thinking, wow, that was really good. So yeah, that would be my message to people. If you've got a mate that's half thinking about it, get him down, bring him down, and all of a sudden you'll have a group of friends that start congregating and socialising down at Bromley. That's going to be good for us as well.
And maybe it also shows never leave a game early. I've heard stories of people walking down Hayes Lane hearing the cheers in the distance.
Yeah, that one. I've got to tell you a quick story. Years ago when I was working at a club, I went and looked at a player and I left 10 minutes before the end. I thought, oh, it's so cold, I'm going. He's done nothing, this player. Anyway, I got into training next day and the manager said to me, how did so-and-so do? And the manager obviously knew me very well. He knew I wouldn't stay till the end. I said, yeah, he's all right. Never looked like scoring, though. He said, oh, really? He said, no chances. Nah, nothing. And he popped up and scored the winner, blank, and I'd left. So that was my memory of never leave a game early. I was like, oh, no, he scored the winner. So, yeah, never leave a game early.
Andy, thanks so much for joining us once again, and we'll catch up with you after Saturday's game.
Thank you.
Roy Oliver, welcome back to the podcast. Let's start with reflecting on Tuesday night. It was a bit of a dramatic game, wasn't it?
Yeah, thank you very much for having me, Josh. Yes, it was very dramatic. I mean, that last goal, I've replayed it about 10 times, I think, because it was such a beautiful strike. You know, at first I thought Cheeky had been fouled, but I think it was the other way around now. So, but Corey just picked it up, went inside, bang, it was straight in the net, you know, and that's the way to finish a game, isn't it?
And I think people, obviously, they'll focus on Corey's winner, but we were 1-0 down as well, so
yes,
to come back from 1-0 down early on to win the game is such a bonus.
Yes, yeah. And that's where Andy's got, he's got such a good squad now, because he can bring people off the bench and get on the pitch. You know, he brought Louis on, he brought Miller on as well, you know. And I thought we deserved to win in the end, because as Andy was alluding to, they played the ball nice at the back, backwards and forwards, but they're not getting anywhere, not hurting us. So, and we're much more proactive going forward. So, yeah, Jedi getting that equaliser was brilliant. So that goes back to the level pegging, and I thought we just deserved it in the end.
What went through your head when Corey scored? What was the feeling like?
Well, I went down to, because I left my position up in the stand and went down to the other part of the stand where Andy was, and I said, we're going to score a goal here.
So it was all down to you, Roy. It was all down to you. So, Roy, you've provided us with a lot of stories over your time as a Roy Remember presenter,
yeah,
is what I'm going to call you now. What have you got for us today?
I've got the Amateur Cup semi-final against Bishop Auckland at Leeds United ground, Elland Road. And this game took place on the 10th of March, 1951. And there was a crowd of in excess of 25,000 there. And when we took a train load up to Leeds, a special train load, and there was coaches galore going up there. So I'd imagine something like 1,000, 1,500 Bombay supporters on travelling in them days. The support was phenomenal in them days. And so we went 1-0 down, and then George Brown equalised. And then George Brown scored again, which put us 2-1 up. But then they got a very harsh penalty, and it mentions this in the report of the game. So it didn't look like a penalty, but the referee gave it in the end. So it brought it back 2-2, and then they got the winner to make it 3-2 to them. But say over 25,000 supporters there at Elland Road. But nevertheless, the season was still a good season, because we won the Athenian League again, so that was twice in 3 years. We also went on to win the Kent Amateur Cup against Tunbridge Wells. We won the London Senior Cup against Hendon at Highbury, 4-3. And we lost in the final of the Kent Senior Cup after a replay with Snowdon Colliery. First game was 0-0, and then they beat us in the replay 2-1. Probably a game too much, because they were playing so many cup games at the end of the season. So, but yeah, nevertheless, a very good season.
Brilliant.
Yeah, yeah.
That's a really good one, Roy.
Yeah.
And obviously, you know, our game against Blackpool will, you know, take the headlines next week, but we've obviously got Woking on Saturday, but on Tuesday night, we've got Redbridge at home, haven't we, in the London Senior Cup.
Yeah.
Are you going to be at that one?
I will be, yes. Yeah.
Cheering on the boys.
Yeah.
Are you expecting to see in that one? Obviously, it's, we've seen over the past couple of years a mixture of young players and sort of first team players that haven't received regular football yet? Who are you expecting to see?
I think it'd be very much the same. I think there'll be players what be given a run out, or probably haven't had much game time in the first team. So, and it'd be, because then Andy'd have a dilemma, because he's got some good players and you can't play everybody at once. So I think it'd be a bit mixture on Tuesday night against Redbridge. And we can hope we can progress in the London Senior Cup as well. But it'd give a chance to some of the three young players to have a run out as well and to impress the manager.
Brilliant. Yeah. And obviously, we've got Woking away on Saturday. I'm sure you'll be there as well, supporting the boys. Are you looking forward to that one?
Oh, definitely, yes. And that's going to be another hard game. As I keep saying, and Andy keeps saying, there's no easy games. You might beat the top team one week and lose to the bottom team the next. And that's the way football is. Sometimes you just can't odds it. But I think we're putting in a good performance, and hopefully we can get the 3 points.
Brilliant. Well, thank you for joining us again, Roy, and we'll catch up next week.
Cheers, Josh.
Well, three fantastic interviews there. Really, really good to get Huss on the podcast as well for the first time, and I've no doubt that we'll be getting him back on. But I think it's important, Josh, for these people behind the scenes to come on and educate people about what they do and actually kind of allow people to piece together what a day-to-day looks like here.
Yeah, I think, because for me, I didn't know, obviously Huss didn't speak about it, but Andy spoke about it when speaking about Huss. But yeah, when he was talking about that room being like a safe space for the players and stuff, I'd never looked at it like that. I thought it'd be the room that all players wanted to avoid, whereas that is their...
It's like a little common room, isn't it? Aside from the players' lounge, it's like a little common room for them. Yeah. However, obviously, we'd rather not have too many players in there at once. Huss, to be fair, has been very busy this season, but he's done a remarkable job at getting the players back that we have now at our disposal.
And it is interesting. I think I've been down a couple of times when Josh Pasley and Grant Smith have had their medicals, and it's been interesting to see what Huss does and stuff and the detail that goes into it. And
it's very important stuff.
And it must be awkward, like the first time you're meeting a new player and you have to tell him to do all sorts of different stuff. But
stretches and jumps and runs and measurements and all kinds of things like that.
Turn
and
on your side, turn the other side.
Yeah, up on your left foot, up on your right foot, all of that on the ball of your foot. But Huss is excellent at his job. He's got a great team around him as well. And we're very lucky to have them all here. And thank you to Huss for giving up the time. Thank you to the gaffer and, of course, Roy Oliver as well. It wouldn't be a podcast without those two. And we were delighted to have Huss on as well this week to top everything off. Josh, I think that's pretty much it, isn't it?
Yeah, and I think that little structure's worked a little bit better, you know, having our summary at the start and then just getting through all the guests.
This is the start of a new format.
Yeah.
Who knows? Let us know your feedback, everyone. But just before we finish, we've got the evening with Jimmy Bullard. Really excited for it, all of us here. Next Thursday, the 2nd of November, you can still get stand-in tickets for that one. Head to the website, bromleyfc.co.uk, for more details. It's sure to be an entertaining and enjoyable evening. Josh, thank you so much for joining me as ever. And thank you to all of you who've tuned in. We'll be back with you next week. Until then, goodbye. You could have been following the champions of the Champions League. You could have been, you could have been, you could have been. What's all this stuff you're giving us? There's just one team for me.